This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Where news and talk comes first. We get you all the stories. Stimulating talk is what we do. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
All right, it's 19:38 here on Power Business in Studio. I'm joined by the Deputy Minister at the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, Zuko Godlimpi. We are unpacking this portfolio. It has three fresh faces at the helm in Deputy Minister Godlimpi Whitfield, as well as Minister Parkstow. But this is an important ministry in South Africa. I consider it to be the place where transformation takes place. And it's even where we can ask difficult questions about where we are in South Africa with our transformation policies, and even just keeping track of, how many South African businesses and policies that we already have in place are being used effectively to bring about the economic change that we'd like to see. So without further ado, Deputy Minister, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for having us.
Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you very much. It's a homecoming for me, though. Yeah. I keep saying this. Yeah. I was at the DTI before as a staff member. Now I'm back as one of the executive authority people. So it's good to be back.
Good to be back. I want to speak about somebody who's been there before, and obviously you come back in a different capacity. When you think of the DTIC and you try to take stock of the role that it plays in South Africa, I've told you, for me, it looks like the transformation the place of transformation here in South Africa. What do you think this ministry is meant to do? We know what the vision says and the mission says, but for you.
Okay, just as a starting point, you are correct when you say that DTI is probably the preeminent place where transformation issues must be tackled. But I want us to think about what that transformation looks like, right? It's a three-line split of transformation. Yes, it includes demographic transformation of economic participation. So that's the scope that broad-based black economic empowerment deals with, including the Black Industrialist Program on the one hand. But the other one is about industrial transformation, that is to say, trying to improve the structural profile of the South African economy so that its output is based on a distributional platform that is actually sustainable, that helps with income distribution, helps deal with unemployment, and helps South Africa compete effectively with the rest of the world. And then the third one is related to spatial transformation as well. You know, South Africa has a problem of its industrial and economic profile where the bulk of economic activity happens in about five metropolitan centers and the rest of the country is basically starved of industrial activity. So that's one of the things that the DTIC has got to deal with. And that relates to the question of SEZs that we will talk about down the road. Where do I think we are now? I think that the DTIC has done tremendous, amount of work over the past 30 years, but there are still some major structural issues that remain that still are not attended to. So some of which I'm talking about. This has to do with something that is wrong with the configuration of the state policy framework, you know. The discussion is whether or not industrial policy is the starting point of statewide economic policy or it is the end point. And I think that's where the DTIC has been shortchanged in how we've organized the state over the years. But one of the important things that has happened now with the GNU is that if you read the statement of intent that the GNU partners signed, it actually foregrounds state policy in industrial policy, which means almost for the first time since 1994, you are going to have macroeconomic policy that is anchored on industrial policy as, you know, the organizing theme. And I think once we get that into place, we are going to have a much more impactful DTIC that people will see. But of course, the DTIC has done a lot of work. The Competition Commission resides with the DTIC. The Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Commission resides with the DTIC. And the Competition Commission is one of the most influential and important institutions of the state. It has done a lot of work in unbundling monopolies, in dealing with anti-competitive behavior in the economy, in imposing fines on major corporations that were refusing to act in transparent ways in the interest of the public good in South Africa. So on that front, it has done well. The evolution of transformation targets and the BBBEE code over the years is the work of the DTIC. We can have a debate about, you know, efficacy in implementation. And I'll be the first one to say, ever since I worked there, one of the major issues is that broad-based black economic empowerment in South Africa has not been enforced as it should have been. it works as almost a voluntary scheme where, depending on what the feelings of a company are, they do it or they don't do it, and there are no consequences on that front. But that also includes state entities as well. It's not just a private sector problem. So even us as government, we've been defaulting on meeting our BEE targets. And that's one of the areas that we're going to strengthen. You've got to build a legislated, you know, transformation framework. So transformation, you know, there's this rule that people always sell that the problem in South Africa is that transformation is imposed. The problem is actually that it's not sufficiently imposed. That is why the demographic outcomes are the way that they are. Otherwise, had it been imposed as people claim it to be, we would not have the racial inequality profile that we have in South Africa, both in terms of the distribution of income and opportunity in those who are active economic agents, but also the exclusion of millions of historically marginalized people because employment is not there. So in a nutshell, the DTIC has done a lot of work, but it still has a lot of work to do. But I think that now, from the political foregrounding point of view, from the policy statement that the GNU partners signed, which starts with industrial policy as the anchor of economic policy, I think we'll achieve much more over the next 5 years.
Well, that said, we're speaking about the GNU. I want to touch on that a little bit because I think many people are wondering. One of the big, I'm going to use the word scandals, and they're going to be inverted commas, because one of the big questions around the GNU was the fact that when it speaks specifically to policies that sit within this specific department, the DA and the ANC are divergent. And that's something we're all wondering here when we speak about policies like a triple BEE here, and you're saying that it is not, enforced the way that it should. When we say that we're going to bring, the DA in here and we're going to create policies that kind of move for everybody, what does that mean for everybody, Deputy Minister?
I think let's go back to the GNU. And this is what people sometimes miss. And there's been a lot of dramatic discourse about what the policy framework of government is going to look like. But this was settled during the negotiation process that brought about the GNU. So what happened is the GNU is built on the basis of a statement of intent. And that statement of intent has two major sections that are of consequence here. The first one talks about the foundational principles of this government. And this was to try to reconcile what would obviously be extreme ideological competing ends of different political parties. So the first thing that is there is constitutionalism. So every political party accepted that they will abide by the prescripts of the constitution, one. And that included a commitment to redress, to transformation, to non-racialism, to non-sexism, to basically, you know, the issues of empowerment that are there. So it settles the debate about BEE. Okay. All parties signed that, and it has implications about the sustainability of employment equity, of BEE, of affirmative action. Now, if you come to the program of action policy-wise, which is in the statement of intent of the GNU as well, what is its starting point? Rapid industrialization, the pursuit of economic growth, inclusive transformation of the economy, a fight against inequality, redress, women empowerment. Essentially, the stock and trade of progressive constitutionalism is what is going to be the underpinning principles of the industrial policy that is going to come. So from where we are sitting, there is a framework for policy consensus within the GNU. This doesn't mean that political parties lose their individual identities, and they might not try to campaign for policy positions that they feel strongly about. But the key issue is, at an institutional policy formation level, there is a framework. All those who are in government are going to be governed by that framework. Are parties going to make statements that are contrary to that? Of course they will. Are parties going to fight over foreign policy? Of course they will. But what is going to be the attitude of government? Well, all of us signed this statement of intent, and this is what it tells us. Now, the other element that is contained in there is about what happens when a political party wants to propose a repeal of existing law. Assume that one political party says, we don't want employment equity, we don't want BBB, you want this thing done away with. What the statement of intent explains as a mechanism, it says, well, that party is going to have to canvass at least 60% agreement of parties within the GNU, but on the basis of the total seats in parliament.
Okay.
The ANC has 40% of seats in parliament. So it means any party that wants to repeal any law it must at least get the consent of the ANC. And because the ANC is not going to move on issues of employment equity, BEE, and affirmative action, I think South Africans can rest assured that those progressive policies will remain in place.
Okay. I think it's an important one to hash out because, like you're saying, we've seen lots of sensationalist debates around this issue. Let's get into some of the nitties that sit there. And I really want to speak specifically to master plans. And I think we spent quite a bit of time on the show actually really unpacking master plans and really trying to see that as sectoral plans, essentially, here in South Africa. I want to speak about where your thinking around master plans are, especially as how then they work with other policy. If we are maybe sitting with too many policy documents that might not be coherent, that might not be speaking to each other, and with these master plans not being as effective as what we had imagined.
You know, let me first provide the context of why did we end up going for the master plans route. Historically, we tried as of 2008 in South Africa what was called the National Industrial Policy Framework. And this was aimed at mapping out South Africa's industrial policy for overall economic growth, so the economy-wide thing. And one of the anxieties that arose over time was, you see, yes, you have one economy, but you have many different sectors. And some of the industrial policy requirements of one sector might not be useful for another sector. So you run a risk of sectoral bias in the framing of industrial policy. So you'll have one industrial policy, yes, as a starting point, but it might actually not allow you to get many sectors to get off the ground. For instance, the labor demands of different sectors, they vary. The energy requirements of sectors, they vary. The capital intensity requirements of sectors, they vary. The labor absorptive capacity of sectors, they vary. Now, you cannot have a one-size-fits-all in that manner. So what the master plans do, they actually help you to negotiate sectoral compacts. That is, you have a discussion between labor, capital, and government in the specific sector, attuned to the dynamics of that sector. It helps you to produce a master plan. Then you take all the 8 master plans that we have, you aggregate them, you pick up the underlying logic of them, and it also tells you about which sectors have a shared problem or shared possibilities and so on, then your overall industrial strategy is then concretely expressive of what the sectors want. So the master plan innovation is one of the best things that we've done in South Africa. But the key, of course, is implementation and getting the buy-in. And think about it as a step towards the so-called social compact. You can have a broad social compact, but it doesn't help you deal with the technicalities on the ground. But if you build the sectoral social compact, it helps you to then build a realistic social compact at the top, which is what we want the industrial strategy to be. It must actually be an economic articulation of what South Africa's social compact must look like. And that's what the master plans are about.
Have we been in 30 years of deindustrialization?
So, 30, yes, we've been. Actually, not 30 years.
Okay.
Not more? 30 years. You know, people have this thing of saying 30 years. It's not. The deindustrialization trend began around 1978.
Okay.
In South Africa. And it coincides with a number of global developments as well, which led to that. Suffice to say, industrial policy since the election of President Reagan in 1980 and Margaret Thatcher in 1979 in the US and the UK, respectively, was under attack globally. You know, it was the era of the free market economy. It was the era of trade liberalization. It was the era of those great powers imposing their way through the rest of the world. And that is what produced the Uruguay Round, which is known as the World Trade Organization now, which deals with trade policy across the world. And its principal take since it came about in the early 90s was basically to force countries to equilibrate by removing trade tariffs and so on. And that has led to some countries having the capacity to undermine the industrial capabilities of other countries from a competition point of view. But if you pay attention to what has happened post-2008 globally, the election of President Donald Trump in 2016, the Brexit vote in Britain in the years that follow, the policy platform of the Biden administration now, the policy platform of the UK, France, and everybody, you are actually seeing the return of industrial policy. And that suddenly changes the trade policy conversation globally and provides opportunities for South Africa to get back to conversations that we couldn't have before. So, for instance, we are deindustrializing because we've not been able to protect our steel industry. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the fact that we were forced to engage in trade liberalization. We were unable to protect our textile industry. We were unable to protect a great deal of these ones. That's one. But South Africa has also forced itself into another impossible path over the past 30 years. We've not been able to maximize utilizing South Africa's mineral resources to build its industrial capacity. And that's because we've allowed the private sector ambitions to capture high profits in commodity markets to be the driving heartbeat of our industrial profile. So what you have, you mine a lot of your products in South Africa, you put them on rail, you transport them to the ports, you get them out of the continent. What you are doing, in essence, you are actually offshoring a great deal of potential employment as well, one, but you are also offshoring a great deal of foreign exchange earnings. Yes, with commodities you get foreign exchange earnings, but think about the difference in price between a raw commodity and a processed commodity being sold to the foreign market. So it's a fact of life that we've been deindustrializing because some of the policy choices that we've pursued, or at a strategic level, what we've done with what we have, we've not built industrial capabilities, even in areas where there were spaces to. But as I say, one of the constraining effects was the direction of industrial policy being under attack across the globe. Yes, it was under attack rhetorically because, you know, China has been engaged in industrial policy since forever. The Americans did remove their foot from the pedal a bit, but they are getting back to it. Since Trump, they are back to it. Biden actually extended the Trumpian industrial policy. Whether Trump or Biden wins in November, they will still be extending industrial policy because the American policymakers and business have now coalesced around that consensus about the return of industrial policy. And now in South Africa, we say, because of that dynamic globally, it leaves us with an opportunity to recalibrate the industrial policy conversation as well. Hence, then, the statement of intent insists that industrial policy is the anchor point of economic policy as a whole. So we're in an era of breaking taboos, basically. Mm-hmm. When industrial policy was a taboo, all of us who insisted on it, we sounded like lunatics and people who don't grasp the complexities of modern economics. But the swing of the pendulum globally is proving the lunatics of yesterday to be the rational ones of today.
Well, that said, then with the statement of intent and macroeconomic policy being anchored in industrial policy, can we then say that we will create the kind of environment that will create jobs?
We definitely will. And one of the things that we're starting this term on a positive footing on is the energy crisis. Mm-hmm. One of the binding constraints that we've had to industrial growth was, you know, energy insecurity. And I think with the stability at Eskom now and the reforms that we will continue pressing on, including ramping up investment in transmission infrastructure, onboarding into the grid, including renewable power, but alongside our generation fleet that is coal-fired, we will have the sort of energy security needed to power up an industrial economy. That's one. And the crisis at Transnet as well woke all of us up to the reality that we've had an investment deficit in rail infrastructure in South Africa, and that undermines our capacity to improve our export logistics infrastructure. And that work is underway. The Transnet recovery plan, alongside the Eskom action, the energy action plan, are beginning to show positive results. That is why you are going to start seeing the Reserve Bank in no time releasing, you know, the brakes on interest rates, because the binding constraints that have been the justification are no longer at play. So I do think that we are on course to sort of create the sort of industrial impact and employment creation and economic growth that we need. It won't happen within the next 6 months, of course, but the building blocks will be put in place in the next 6 months. But I think in the medium term of the next 18 months going, South Africa is going to start experiencing a positive swing on employment creation, on economic growth statistics, and so on condition that we maintain the momentum on these network industries of logistics, of electricity. We'll solve the water problem as well. It's another major issue. Telecoms reforms as well, they will come into place. But yeah, I think from a stability point of view, we are poised to do well. And of course, there's new kids on the block. I think this administration is made up of very creative young people who have put in the years and work of understanding the dynamics of the South African economy and what should be done to get it right. And I'm quite confident. And of course, we have news anchors like you who are young and who are clued up on this thing. So the two-way street between civil society, the media, government, and other actors, I think it will get us to the consensus that we need to build the economy.
Deputy Minister, we don't have much time left. I want to speak about something that comes up here a lot. We speak to lots of SMMEs and the DTIC and trust. Mm. And I want to speak about that from the perspective of this being a part of government that is accessible to most South Africans, but most importantly, to black business. Maybe we can make examples of agencies such as the NEF or the IDC, but maybe generally the DTIC here. I believe there's a gap to be bridged here, and I'm wondering if that is already on your radar as new leaders within this department, that there's work to be done between specifically black business owners and the DTIC in them seeing the DTIC as a conduit for their success, you know, as something that is set up to empower them genuinely.
Most definitely. It's the top of our agenda, actually. Now, if you look at the DTI's in sort of like design, in design, it is designed for black people, and I'll show you why. You have the Black Industrialist Program. You have the National Economic Empowerment Fund, which is for black people. You have the IDC, which has a mandate of empowerment as well. You then have the Competition Commission. What is the Competition Commission's role in this thing? It's really to break up monopolies and antitrust behavior. Why? Because we know in economic practice and theory that monopolies and anti-competitive behavior stifles out innovation. It prevents the entrance of new players into the market. It muzzles out SMMEs. So, and then what does the NEF and the IDF, they are supposed to avail capital to SMMEs in order to enable them to sort of transition from ideas and small production to medium-sized production. But the main issue is how they've been articulated and the design of the funding instruments of the NEF and the IDC, they need to be changed. Mm. The Black Industrialist Program was an attempt to bridge that 10 years ago. I think there's room for improvement to get that right. And I think we now have a good sense of what the issues are. But the issue has been you've got to build SMMEs on the basis of a robust industrial strategy so that you can channel them towards sectors that have both potential for filling up the domestic market, but that can also be integrated into international trade as well for their own sustainability and to improve their business models. We've had that discussion with the department as soon as we got in. And today, actually, we had a long strategic session with the department from 10:30 in the morning until 4:30, zooming exactly to these empowerment questions and how they relate to the industrial policy. So the DTIC has got to work for the majority in South Africa, and that majority is its black people. If it doesn't work for them, then it means it is unable to justify its existential mandate. And we want to make it work, and we want SMMEs to suddenly have confidence that it is working for them.
We're out of time. I didn't get through all my questions. I told you I wouldn't.
Call me again. We will get through
absolutely
the rest.
But I'd like to thank you so much, Deputy Minister. I think it's important for us to have these very candid conversations, you know, and also ask the difficult questions. And we look forward to speaking about your leadership and hearing about it and calling you back and maybe even fighting in the future.
But I'm available for any of those. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. That is Deputy Minister in the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, Zukoko Dlimpie.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.